Thanks for listening to the Suzy Larson Life podcast, available thanks to support from listeners like you. It's only just a matter of welcome to Suzy Larson Live. Always so honored to get to spend this time with you. In fact, I look forward to bringing you conversations every single day that hopefully inspire you in your faith walk, that deepen your understanding of God's Word, and that heightens your awareness of His very real presence in your life. So what happens when you mash neuroscience, faith, and hope together? You get one of my favorite people who's got an amazing podcast, Dr. Lee Warren. He's just one of our favorites. He's no stranger to intense pain and loss. He loves Jesus first and foremost. He's a brilliant neurosurgeon, but you know what else? He's a brilliant writer. This book, Hope is the First Dose, is, I mean, just as a writer, I have to just say the craft. He's so good at writing. The story is so gripping, and the application, so much practical application, so much takeaway in this book. Hope is the First Dose, a treatment plan for recovering from trauma, tragedy, and other massive things. And our prayer and hope is to get him on once a month or just on somewhat of a regular basis to remind us how to perform self-brain surgery, and I'll let him explain what that means. But just the art and the power and the necessity of renewing our mind. If you want in on the drawing, this is a hardcover book, and it's just well worth every penny if you want to buy it, which I highly suggest. But if you want in on the drawing, text the word book to 877-933-2484. I have a few topics that I haven't even told Dr. Warren about yet. Have you heard about these victim t-shirts that young people are wearing these days, where they wear something that says depressed or anxious, loser, victim? So what are the physiological and even maybe the sociological implications of wearing statements? I mean, it's one thing when we come into agreement with the enemy, but nobody sees it, but we're wearing it inwardly. It's a whole nother thing to wear that thing for the world to see, as if you're just accepting defeat. In fact, getting your identity from being helpless and hopeless. What are the implications of that? That's the number one question for Dr. Lee today. Second is, what happens in our brains and even our hormones when we decide to pivot and think helpful, redemptive thoughts? What changes? Because things change when you start to change how you think. What are some practical ways to nurture a healthy spine and brain? As a former fitness professional, this is super interesting to me. Talking to a neuro brain spine surgeon, how great. That's going to be awesome. And then this one was from his Frontal Lobe Friday podcast today about the importance of rewiring your thought patterns in the context of community. And it's so fascinating. So I'm hoping and praying we can get to all those points. If you've got questions, go on and text them in, and I'll see if I can weave them into the conversation. A few quick announcements. You've been hearing about our Reading the Bible Together initiative. We go through these initiatives where we're reading a particular book of the Bible. Well, this time, it's about five women in the lineage of Jesus. We're calling it Unexpected. You'll find all the information on our website at myfaithradio.com. Hey, and if you live in the Twin Cities, 2 weeks from tonight, I'm speaking at Emmanuel Christian Center's Sisterhood event. It's free. Please come. I would love to see you. It's going to be a powerful night, amazing worship, and I've got a fresh message that I think is right from the Lord for your heart. And then November 9th through 11th, if you're in Pennsylvania, I'll be there at the Inspire Conference. That one's not free, and you'll find information. It's at Hershey Lodge. Okay, now let me tell you about my guest. We'll get him on the show. Dr. Lee Warren is a practicing neurosurgeon and the award-winning author of several books. He talks to thousands of his closest friends, of which I'm one, I'm just going to say, daily about faith, doubt, and neuroscience on the Dr. Lee Warren podcast. His wife, Lisa, is way out of his league, and his four grandkids have him completely wrapped around their fingers. And he has got a beautiful life in Nebraska. He also lives with his sidekick and father-in-law, Dennis. They call him Tata. And we love it every time we get to talk with him. Dr. Warren, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Suzy, it's so great to be with you again. Thanks for having me back.
Looking forward to our conversation. So before we dig into some of the content from your book and just some current topics of the day, you know, we open the show every day with the same question. What's God been impressing upon your heart these days?
You know, it's funny that you are going to talk in a minute about t-shirts that people are wearing. Lisa and I have been talking about this theme that he seems to be putting in front of us about labels. Like, life has just this incessant label maker that it's sticking on labels on people all the time. And I realized recently that the label lacks the power to identify or define the labeled thing. We assign the meaning. to what's on the label. And so we have all these people who are living their lives under labels that Satan or somebody else has given them that aren't really true if they've given their lives to Christ. And it's such a tragedy, Susie, when we allow ourselves to believe things that aren't true of our own lives. It's just a prison, and we don't have to be in it.
Yeah. And even though you and I are coming from different, you know, walks of life, we share that exact same passion to see people healed and whole so they can go on to be and do all that Jesus intended for them and paid such a high price for. And I think that's why you and I get along so well and connect so much, because we are as best we can helping those to get there. And so I don't know if you've heard about this. I was just shocked when I heard about this latest, it's a fashion trend actually among young people where they wear these t-shirts that in my opinion reinforce their captivity. And I'm not judging or condemning. I literally could weep for it, you know, because as you said, the label that they're putting on, that even doesn't have the power to, they're image bearers, but they're t-shirts that say anxious, depressed, victim. And I'm not sure, Dr. Lee, who first coined the phrase learned helplessness, but it sort of reminds me of that. So I would love your thoughts from a neuroscience perspective. It's one thing to just sort of agree with some of these things. It's another thing to come into full agreement to the point where you're wearing it. What say you?
Yeah, this is such an important question, and I haven't seen that the trend, but I'm not surprised, because that's our society right now. It's all about feelings, right? We're teaching people that what they feel is real, and that what you feel needs to be fought for and, you know, validated. And the fact is, from a neuroscience standpoint, feelings are not facts. Feelings are chemical events in your brain that happen. And so if you then allow a feeling to become an identity, then you are creating synapses in your brain where that's going to become more and more real and more inescapable in your life. And you can talk about that way better than I can on the spiritual side, but I'll just give you one little thing that we know from neuroscience now. Like we've been fighting this battle for over 60 years, almost 70 years since Watson and Crick discovered DNA or defined what DNA is. This battle where culture and educational systems have been teaching people that most of your life is genetically determined, right? That you are this because your mom and dad were that. And we know now that that isn't true, Susie. Like, I hear people in my office every day saying, well, I can't help it that I'm significantly overweight. It runs in my family. I can't help it that I've got a bad back. It runs in my family. I'm depressed. I'm an alcoholic. I'm abusive because my dad was, right? But what we know now is that there are a lot of things that you inherit, your eye color, hair color, certain tendencies towards certain diseases, but a tremendous amount, the vast majority of the things that happen in your life, you can change by decisions that you make. But you can change by thinking differently, by living differently, by making different choices than your parents did. And epigenetics is the science of how genes get turned on and off. And that happens in seconds when we change our behavior. And so what that means is, if you have a label on you that says I'm anxious because everybody in my family was anxious, you can change that label, friend, because you can change it. And you might need some therapy. You might need some help. You occasionally might need some medication, but you don't have to live under that burden of that label anymore. Susie, that's what I would say.
Amen. And I wonder, I mean, it seems like, as you said, culture is, you know, there's a trend towards learned helplessness. And you even talk about in your book, again, no stranger to unbelievable loss and hardship, but how easy it is to make an idol out of our pain. And I feel like we're there right now, Lee. Just, I say that soberly, like, oh, Lord, have mercy. But I do feel like the enemy is behind that. I mean, God, he's the God of all comfort. He's the one who reaches us in our pain and lifts us out of it. But to make an idol out of your pain, or to the point where you get your identity from your status so that you're absolved from any kind of effort to get through it or out of it, is so sad. And it's exactly what the enemy wants. He wants you in captivity. So talk about what it means. Right. How would a person know if they're possibly making an idol out of their pain?
Well, I think this, if you look at idolatry simply, it's when anything that's bigger or more powerful than God in your life or in your mind, even anything that takes the place of God in your life. And that can happen sneakily, where it's not that you would say it out loud, but if you spend more time and more energy and more passion and more belief in something being unchangeable or of prime importance in your life, then it's an idol. And so I learned that after we lost our son, like it's really easy to slide down the slope of having that thing that happened become the only thing that you can think or talk about. about. And you and I both, you probably hear from people. I do every day on my podcast, and you have many more listeners than I do, Susie, but you probably hear from people that the massive thing that happened in their life happened 30 years ago. And it's still the defining thing that they exist around in their whole life, that their mom died, their uncle did something to them, something happened, and it's all they can relate to today. And if that's you, friend, then that has become an idol in your life. And the solution for it then is to let God start keeping some of his promises to you. And he says, I will come alongside you in your pain. I won't remove your pain, but I'll come alongside you and let my abundance come in there too. And you can live in this place where things can hurt and you can still have a hopeful, meaningful, and purposeful life. And then all of a sudden, God starts stepping in between you and that thing that's been the only thing you could see for a long time. And he starts being bigger by being true to his character, and you start believing that he can do the things he says he can do. And all of a sudden that problem gets smaller and smaller, and you get your loves ordered, as Augustine would say, and then things start coming back online for you.
You know, your podcast really is amazing, and I've shared it with so many friends who said now it's their new favorite, and I'm not surprised by that. I would love to know, what are some of the comments you've received? Because again, being in a culture that just is like, stay in your captivity, stay in your pain. And if people have multi levels of pain, which most do, and they're receiving some kind of, you know, affection, attention, compassion for that, and they're applying it to all the other levels of pain in their lives, it's not a motivator for them to come through it. And then you come along in this very gentle, humble way and invite people to start thinking differently. You know, I've heard, as you've read some comments, it's like a light bulb moment, but I would love for you to just share how people have responded as you've been teaching on self-brain surgery.
Yeah, it's amazing, really. You know, somebody asked me yesterday in an email that I got, what's the difference between cognitive behavioral therapy and self-brain surgery that you teach? And I said, well, first of all, this idea of self-brain surgery is not really something I made up. It's just because I'm a brain surgeon, I use these metaphors. It's something from the Bible. You can either live with the thoughts and feelings and experiences that you have, and you can continue to create synapses around them and assign every brand new neuron in your brain that you make every day to sort of stewarding the same feelings and emotions and problems that you've had for your whole life or since that massive thing occurred. Or you can decide that that isn't working very well for you. So what I would say of those people that are nursing that hurt or whose identities have become wrapped up in that hurt is I would say what Dr. Phil says. I'm not a big fan of pop psychology, but he says something that stuck out for me. He says, how's that working for you? And if you're real honest with yourself and you say, this thing that I've been doing, this mechanism of coping with this life that I've got isn't really working for me. And if you say, I would really love to become healthier and feel better and be happier, I would really love to let God's promise of an abundant life come true, then you can't get there from here, because what got you here won't get you there, right? So the things that you've been doing without changing them are not going to produce some kind of massive positive change in your life. And so what's the secret to that massive positive change? It's Romans 12:2, Susie. It's where life says, society says, culture says, conform to this, and we'll show you how to be happy. Think the way we do. Make everybody validate your feelings. Make everybody validate your identity, and you'll be happier. Well, how's that working for you, right? We see people that do that aren't really happy, because what happens when you get the thing you want? The target changes, right?
Yeah.
The target keeps moving. So the truth is, if it's not working, then you need to do something different. So what's the back half of Romans 12:2? Don't be conformed to the way the world wants you to think, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. It's changing your mind about the thing that's happened and this value and its importance in your life and allowing your brain chemistry to do what God put it there to do, which is, your brain is a voracious changer. It wants to change. And when it does, it will wire new synapses in that will produce more positive change in your life than you can imagine. And anybody can do this. And you do it by the power of the Holy Spirit saying, I'm going to come alongside you and I'm going to show you how to think differently about this reality by biopsying your thoughts, by saying, is this thought that I'm thinking true? And if it's not, I need to replace it with the one that is true. And then let God speak into that with life, because God deals with truth, because he's the truth, right? And if it's true and it's not helpful, or if it's harmful to me, then I need to replace it with a thought that's also true but is helpful to me.
Come on.
And so, does that make sense?
So good. We're going to pause here. When we come back, this I didn't list in the open as far as a topic, but it feels like an important one, is how do we put emotions in their proper place? You know, not shoving them in the basement saying they don't matter, but not letting them win the day and not building our whole lives around letting our emotions lead, but get the proper information from our emotions. But in the way of what you're just talking about, we talked thought biopsy last time, but for those who missed it, I think we have to revisit. And also ahead, we're going to talk about some of the ways you can nurture healthy spine health and brain health. And I'm going to have you guys take a wild guess at some of the best things you can do for your spine and for your brain. If you want to even text those in, you can. 877-933-2484. Talking to Dr. Lee Warren. His book, it's so good. It, again, reads like a novel because the story that of what he's walked through is so gripping, but so much practical advice as well. Hope is the First Dose, a treatment plan for recovering from trauma, tragedy, and other massive things. Text the word book if you want in on the drawing. 877-933-2484. You're quiet today. I want to hear from you. Text me. Tell me what you're thinking. We'll be back in a minute. Faith Radio podcasts are produced by the listener-supported ministry of Faith Radio. If you're interested in becoming a team member, a donor to this ministry, you can support the podcast anytime and donate at myfaithradio.com. Hope you're having a really great day. Thanks for tuning in to Susie Larson Live, talking to my friend Dr. Lee Warren. I love him. He's a neuro brain and spine surgeon, and he's got a podcast where he smashes together faith and neuroscience, all about what he calls self-brain surgery, just learning how to capture your thoughts and make them obedient to Christ. And he talks about the physiological implication of thinking right thoughts and wrong thoughts. And he says this in the book. He says, feelings are not facts, but rather neurochemical events. Listen to this. That can be challenged, but left unchecked, they reliably produce a set of thoughts and behaviors that we program into our muscle memory over time. When I feel this, I think that, eat this, drink that, buy this, do that, say this, call that person, or blame that person. Thoughts become things. And we got to camp there for just a little bit because, you know, we want to lead with our feelings. And people will say, I don't feel God, so he's not there. And I'm not feeling the love, so our love must have grown cold. And, but feelings are such a nuanced thing, and they're so connected to so much of our unresolved history. So, teach us a bit more, if you would, on that.
Yeah. So the whole thoughts become things is a reality. I mean, the fact is that the things that you think about turn into genes that get either turned on or deregulated, turned on or off. Those things turn into hormone changes in your brain. Those turn into chemical signal events that turn into different proteins being expressed in your body. And that turns into how you reproduce and how your organs function. So the fact is the things you think about affect the physiology and neurobiology of your body and your brain and your life. This has been shown in an interesting way in Holocaust survivors and PTSD, people from Vietnam, and it's been shown in mice models down to four generations. So things like if you take a mouse and expose them to the smell of a cherry, for example, and when they respond to that cherry smell, you shock them, then there are genetic changes that happen in the sperm cells of those mice that are passed down to four generations of their offspring. And those offspring, although they've never been shocked, are scared of the smell of cherries, because their parents were. And so that means that we're born with a whole set of things that we think and feel, even subconsciously, that turn into biological realities in our life, because thoughts become things. And this happens and it hurt me, therefore I need to avoid that thing. And that turns into a whole biological system in your life. So the reality is, Susie, that the things we think about turn into the ways that we live. And when I talk about feelings aren't facts, you have a limited palette of chemical signals in your brain that tell you that you're anxious or that you're feeling depression or that you're feeling fear. You have a limited number of chemicals that create that palette of what we call emotions, right? The problem is those chemical triggers are not specific. So in other words, and you can understand this, everybody understands this. If you step into your garage and there's a grizzly bear in your garage, you're going to feel all the physiological things that go with fear, because there's a real threat, right? There's a bear in your garage. You won't have time to ask the question, how did a bear get into my garage right then? Because you'll be scared, right? But if you hear a noise in the middle of the night and your brain says, I think there's a bear, that may or may not be true. But what will you feel? You'll feel the same fear, right? Because the fear feeling comes from chemical signals in your brain that come from your limbic system that are designed to keep you alive. God gave us this incredible system of fight or flight realities that create chemical events that trigger physiological events that help us to run away from danger or fight when there's danger, right? The problem is you can feel the same set of emotions when there's a real threat, like a bear in your garage, a perceived possible threat, like the sound that might be a bear, or thinking about your work tomorrow when you got to deal with that jerk that might get you fired. You'll feel the same fear for an anticipated possible event. Right. So when I talk about feelings aren't facts, we live in a culture that says, hey, if you feel offended, you are offended. If you feel this, you are that. Put it on your t-shirt. Right. And the problem is, if you live your life as if everything you feel is true, then you're going to start running into some things that are going to make you have a hard time with reality, because not everything you feel turns out to be manageable in the real world. Right. So the secret to health and happiness then is to learn to take a second between what you feel and what you do, because you need to learn to put a little space in there. And that's what I call that brain biopsy, that thought biopsy, is to say, wait a minute, I feel this. Is it really true that I need to be afraid right now? And if it is, then what can I do that's healthy and helpful instead of just running away every time, or instead of just reacting the way that I've always reacted to that trigger? And so learning to put that little space in there, that's what Eastern meditation is about, by the way. It's just that simple discipline of spacing out the sound, the stimulus and the response. And some people think that's enough to be a little bit happier because they can calm that impulse down. But I would say spiritual brain surgery involves learning to put enough space in there that you can let God speak into those moments. And take those emotions and those complex feelings and say, where are these coming from? And let's process them. And then let's respond in a way that honors God and helps me actually accomplish the mission of becoming healthier and feeling better and being happier.
You know, you think about doing that, you know, what better day than today to start? When you start to interrupt those thought processes and you start to insert truth, you start to change, you know, the coding, for lack of a better, you know, the neural pathways. And I would imagine it makes you less triggerable. If you're starting to interject and intercept these thoughts going, wait a minute, not helpful, or it might be true, but it's not helpful, or maybe it's a lie, but Lord, what is redemptive? What's truthful? You know, it not only brings healing to those parts of your story, I feel like it helps ensure how you'll handle things later, because you're laying a groundwork of healthy responses. You know, as you're talking, I'm thinking of someone who's maybe had some tough relationships in the past. And so now they approach relationship now with, I'm going to sabotage this before you get a chance to reject me. And one of the things in that quote that I read that you said, it's like, feelings are not facts. They're neurochemical events that can be challenged. But if they're left unchecked, they will reliably produce a set of thoughts and behaviors that we program into our muscle memory over time. And that can't help but impact your relationships, your employment, the way you show up in every, you know, you can't just wear those things and react constantly to your emotions without some kind of collateral damage, right?
That's right. That's exactly right. And we know, so you know what synapses are, right? So synapses are the connections between neurons in our brains. And you and I have talked before about Hebb's law, which is this idea that synapses are neurons that fire together, wire together. And the mechanism of how neurons wire together is through synapses, these connections. And there's been some interesting research that show, I don't think we've talked about this before, it shows that when you learn something new or think about something new that you haven't thought about before, you almost double the amount of synapses around that idea. And what that means is your brain gets like almost twice as good as at thinking about that thing within seconds to minutes of the first time that you process it and stew on something for a while. But then what happens is, if you don't keep re-engaging that behavior or thought pattern, within 3 weeks, those synapses that you just made are chewed up and gone, and you even drop to a baseline of lower number of synapses around that than you had before you started. So what does that mean? It means, right? And it's terrifying, but it's also encouraging. What it means is that when we flex a mental muscle, Our brain is equipped and ready, as I said a while ago. It's an aggressive learner, and it wants to put all the hardware around that idea that it needs to make that almost inevitable for you to keep thinking that way. Okay. And so if you encourage that and keep thinking that thought or doing that thing or practicing that habit, that's how you learn what they call muscle memory, which isn't really muscle memory, it's brain memory. Your brain creates pathways that automate that thing. And we say in the self-brain surgery conversation, we say, what you're doing, you're getting better at. Everything that you do, you are getting better at doing that thing because your brain automates it. And that's how, if you got an email tonight, Susie, that they were going to move your studio to a new building in Minneapolis, and Monday morning you had to drive to a new place, on that first drive to the new place, you would be hyper aware, paying careful attention to every turn and every lane change, and you wouldn't be messing with your radio or, you know, looking at your phone. Hopefully you don't do that when you drive, but you would be hyper aware of the turns and places you need to go to get to that new place. But after you made that drive four or five times, all of a sudden, what would happen? You'd get to work and you wouldn't even remember the drive, right? You'd remember the thing you were listening to on the radio, or what you were praying about, or what you were worried about that day. And the reason is that method of driving becomes synaptically programmed in your brain over time, and you have to devote less and less attention to accomplishing that task. And that same thing happens to anything that you do. If you worry about something incessantly, guess what you do? You create a bunch of pathways that automate worrying for you around that thing and around anything related to that thing. And it becomes a baseline behavior for this thing happens, you feel that thing, and you start worrying. And before you know it, you spent a whole night with your stomach hurting and stressed out about something that may or may not be even real, right? Because you've taught your brain to do that thing, and what you're doing, you're getting better at.
This is why I want you on once a month, because if, you know, we've said this before, it's not a once and done proposition. This is something that we have to practice and be reminded of. But the idea, let's say you had a major breakthrough in some way and you were practicing redemptive thinking and even reframing the narrative about parts of the story that have been breaking your heart, but God has given you more of a redemptive perspective. But then the enemy gets in and starts poking, and he kind of, you know, tries to cancel that narrative and get you to take the bait of the old narrative that's tying your gut up in knots. And there you go, and you lose the ground again. Well, you can always start again. But that process of consistency is just so important. So when we come back, Dr. Lee, I'd love to for you to give some practical examples for someone. Let's say they've got a unresolved heartbreak and they're living with it. They wish it was different, but there's other parts of their life that are very blessed. But they find themselves seconds away from the ditch. How can they catch themselves, and what are practical ways to reframe so that they can walk in the truth that sets them free? And then, friends, we are going to get to talk about spine and brain health. What are some practical ways you can nurture spine health and brain health? And I'm daring you to text me and just take a swing at it. I see a few that have come in already. What are your best guesses for how to best care for your brain and for your spine? And then we're also going to talk about, if there's time, how we can rewire nerves that fire together, wire together, how that can happen in the best way possible in the context of community. More with Dr. Lee Warren in just a moment. Well, it's always a great day when I get to talk to my friend, Dr. Lee Warren. He's a brain spine neurosurgeon and a man of God. He's got a great podcast about smashing together faith and neuroscience, and really the call to renew our minds. And he dives so deep in the most beautiful way. And, you know, being a former fitness person and someone who's battled health issues and who cares so much about the healing process, he's speaking my language. So check out the Dr. Lee Warren podcast. But his book we're drawing from too a little bit today, Hope is the First Dose, a treatment plan for recovering from trauma, tragedy, and other massive things. It's powerful. Text the word book if you want in on the drawing, 877-933-2484. We've got a bunch of texts now coming in. People are guessing what would be the best ways to care for spine and health. I can't wait to read those. But before we dig in, one more question about this idea that feelings are not facts, but they're neurochemical events that can be and must be challenged many times. If someone feels like that, everybody, I think, has something in their story that they wish maybe were different. But if there's this unresolved heartache, I hear this from so many people, and they always feel they're seconds away from the emotional ditch. What are practical ways they could protect against that so they can reinforce and reinforce redemptive thinking while they wait for God to break through.
Yeah, I think that I recently came across this idea that I read a book by Mary Frances O'Connor, who's a neuroscientist, and she's done a lot of imaging work on grief and the people who are dealing with what she calls complex grief, which is a situation where you get stuck and you just can't move out of this thing that's hurt you, and you're just stuck there. And there's actual brain changes that happen in these people that you can image compared to people that have a normal response to grief. And she wrote this thing about time traveling in her book. And she, what she meant by that is that we take where we are now and we travel into the past where that painful thing happened, and we try to relate to that painful memory in the context of who we are now. And the problem with that is that we weren't the same person then as we are now, and it's not a fair fight. We can't go back and change anything because that's in the past, right? And we can't bring that loss into the present because we weren't the same person then that we are now. We don't know everything that we know now. And so what I've been thinking about, and we did a whole episode about the neurobiology of that sort of time traveling idea. And from a practical standpoint, if you're dealing with something, heartache, loss, grief, pain, recovery, whatever it might be, the compassion piece for you is to say that you are this person now who has a whole set of experiences and insights and knowledge and podcasts and Bible verses and Susie Larson books and stuff that you've read and learned and therapy sessions you've been through. And you have an insight and a knowledge about your life now that you did not have then when your son was stabbed or when your husband left you or when you got that diagnosis. And you can't go back and say, I wish I hadn't, because when you were in that context of the time that you were in, you did the best you could most of the time. And even if you didn't do the best you could, you didn't know all that you know now. And so I would say, from a practical standpoint, give yourself some grace to say, it's impossible to live in that moment in the past. And that's why Paul says real clearly, you know, we press on, we forget what's behind and we press on toward what's ahead, because that's where redemption lies. That's where hope lies. Hope lies in resurrection. Hope lies in the fact that we know we don't have hope in an outcome. We have hope in a person, and that person is Jesus Christ. Derwin Gray, when he was on my podcast a while back, Dr. Derwin Gray has written some incredible books, a former NFL player. And you, if you haven't had him on your show, you need to.
I have. Derwin, he's great.
Yeah, just fantastic. He said something, we take our pain and we want to worship our pain. And we can't ever heal if we're worshiping our pain. We have to take our pain to the wounds of Christ and let him heal them, because he has this ability to heal our wounds and carry our yoke and give us a burden that we can bear, and he'll walk with us alongside us in that. And that idea of taking our wounds to Christ, because friend, you can't take them back in the past. There's no healing there. It's like ripping your own scab off every time you think back in the past. So from a practical standpoint, I would say self-compassion of the fact that whatever insights you have now into how you would have handled that situation differently, you can't apply it in the past because you don't live in the past. And the fact is you're modeling those memories. And every time you remodel a memory from the past, you change it biologically in your brain and you make it less real compared to what it really was. Wow. And you make it more like something you wish it were now. And that's just it's not a fair fight for you.
Wow, that's so good. Remember in the middle of this relapse, this last one in the last handful of years, when I was telling God, you know, kind of speaking his word back to him, you know, hope deferred makes the heart sick. I'm like, I'm heart sick because you're waiting so long to bring the breakthrough. And I remember clear as day, he just impressed upon my heart, look it up, you know. And so I looked up hope deferred. And once you know the word, it's a verb. Yeah, it's an action word. And that your heart can't live without hope. So to postpone and put off hope will make your heart sick. God wasn't making my heart sick. I was making my heart sick because I was trying to defer hope, going, you know, our hearts can't live without hope. And I know that's so big for you. All right, let's talk spine and brain health. And I'm just going to read a number of these texts and let you speak to them. This dear one says, I would say diet, exercise, posture would help spine health. Love your guests. This is Steve from Wilbraham, he says. Let's see here. Thanks for this discussion. I love this geeky brain stuff. So informative and helpful. I do too. We should be friends. Okay. Sleep and exercise, Lori says. Reed says bone broth, herbs like nettles. Tina says, does posture have anything to do with spine? Janet says, puzzles, learning a new skill, fish oil for brain health. This Melissa says, I default to sweets both in stress and when I'm very happy. Don't judge me. I want to reprogram my brain to be free of sweets of addiction. What's the best way to rewire synapses? We'll talk about that in a minute. Okay, so what say you about, I know spine and health and brain are, they overlap. Some things are helpful to the spine, not so much for the brain, but there are some overlaps. So let's start with the spine. What are some of the best ways to nurture spine health?
That's right. Well, first, let me have a disclaimer. So I am a surgeon, or I'm a brain surgeon and a spine surgeon, but I may be, unlike a lot of my colleagues, surgery is the absolute last resort for most people with back and neck pain. Okay. So surgery is not the first line. The first line is, it just is. I mean, God can heal you. You can change a lot of things with your lifestyle and with some decisions that you make. And I can correct some things in the operating room if necessary, but it's far better for you if you don't have surgery. Now, if you have a neurologic deficit and you're falling, or your bladder's leaking, or there's some kind of significant weakness, then surgery sometimes is the first line. So it's not always the last resort, but for most people it is. That disclaimer having been said, when we talk about general spine health, it's shocking to me how many people don't know how bad smoking is, and even vaping, any type of nicotine for your spine, significant contributor to degenerative disc disease.
Is
smoking.
That
so don't
right?
smoke. It's amazing how people.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
The big craze right now is gummy marijuana. I don't know what the name of it is, but now that it's being legalized in certain states,
yeah,
young people are eating the gummies and, what about something like, I would imagine that's at least an inflammatory factor, right?
So the cannabinoids aren't specifically harmful to the spine, but they are terrible for your brain. This legislation that has legalized marijuana, this is a whole nother topic for another time. The legislation that has legalized marijuana is all about one thing, and that's profit. It's about the politicians realized there was a huge business out there and they could profit on it. People were going to do it anyway. Wow. They might as well make money off of it and make tax dollars off of it. It's about profit. There is tremendous, overwhelming scientific evidence that marijuana is incredibly damaging to your brain, especially the developing brain. And this idea that it's not a harmful drug is a lie, and it's a lie built on the backs of business people making money and politicians getting kickbacks. There is no health benefit to your brain from marijuana. There's just not. So you can fight me about that if you want.
No,
well, I don't want to have a conversation about that today, but that is not helpful. So there are some roles for it in pain control and all that, but I would just submit that there are far better ways to control pain than using cannabinoids and THC and those drugs. So not helpful for your brain.
All right.
Daniel Amen, if you're interested, check out Dr. Daniel Amen's work. He's done some tremendous work there.
Fantastic. So smoking is terrible for the spine.
Smoking's out. Marijuana is out. As far as posture goes, you're exactly right. One of the things that's happening in our world today is we're all spending our time bent forward. We're looking down at keyboards. We're looking down at computers. We're looking down at cell phones. There's even a thing that we're calling in teenagers now. I'm seeing tons of teenagers for neck pain, and they call it text neck because they're sending text messages all the time. So what's happening functionally, I have this conversation 20 times a week in my office now. People say, I've got this big hump in the back of my neck, and my back of my neck hurts all the time. And it hurts because you're bending your head forward all the time. So what happens is the extensor muscles that are supposed to, the long muscles of your back that are supposed to hold your body up and your shoulders back, become atrophied and weak over time because you're constantly holding your body in a forward posture. And then when you need to stand up straight, you're doing it with muscles that have been mechanically disadvantaged, and they're out of balance with the flexor muscles in the front of your body, and your head literally starts to fall forward. And the small muscles in the back of your neck are designed to help you turn your head and stabilize the joints, and they have to get involved in holding your head up when you've weakened your extensor muscles, and you get a neck ache. And so people, number one, need to stand up straighter and focus on bringing their shoulders back and learn that healthier posture. And I can't recommend physical therapy highly enough. It's incredibly important to develop postural stability by training. If you're a person who likes to exercise and work out, train your extensor muscles. Don't overtrain your flexors. And we see this with people in the gym all the time. They do bicep curls. They never train their triceps. And then what happens? They get a bicep tendon injury, right? Because they've overtrained a flexor.
Or they overdevelop their pecs, and their pecs are pulling their shoulders forward, and there's no strength in the back.
So balance, right? Balance out your extensors and your flexors. That's one thing too. And then be careful how you live. Like, be careful how you sit and how you stand and how you sleep. Make sure you have a mattress. It's amazing to me how often people have back pain, and I say, how old is your mattress? And they say, 25 years old. So go get a new mattress. Like, you're not supporting your spine while you sleep. That's important. Mm-hmm. And just gently and kindly, I'll say, there's this huge push right now to say, hey, BMI, body weight, body mass is not that important. You know, we shouldn't define health on one aspect, and all that stuff is true. But excess BMI, excess body weight is incredibly harmful to your spine. And it's just not true that you can be healthy and be significantly overweight. You can't be. Every other aspect of your life, cardiovascular health, longevity, brain health. I just saw a study that looked at women who had developed or didn't develop dementia in their old age. And they looked at their overall level of fitness, including body mass index, when they were under 60. And it's something like 90% increase in risk of dementia if your BMI is significantly elevated, or if you're in a general state of poor health before you're 60. So what does that tell us? That excess weight hurts your brain. Excess weight hurts your body. So that's one thing. If you're struggling with that, see a doctor, exercise more, work on it. Not everybody can look like certain people can, but we can all become healthier over time, right?
I got to break in here. So, amen. We got to take a break here. When we come back, there's a few more things I want to talk about this, because we haven't touched on the brain yet either. I'm thinking you got to have Dr. Troy on your podcast. You would love him. He is on our show. He's a functional med doc who's on every month. But he talks about going every morning, line up against the wall and, you know, do the snow angel. So you're kind of making your arms like clothesline or goalposts, and you do the angel where they can touch at the top, where you're using those extensors and pulling your shoulders back. And you would love him, but we talk about just the physiological impacts of our emotions and everything. So when we come back on the other side, we want to talk a little bit about inflammatory diets that impacts your brain and your spine, controlled movement, just a few things like that. And then whatever Dr. Lee has to say about the brain as well. This is one of those days I wish the show was 2 hours. Boy, talking to Dr. Lee Warren about all kinds of things. But right now we're going to focus on spine and brain health. And then if there's time, we'll tackle rewiring our brains in the context of community. It's super interesting. We'll be back in a minute.
Hey, this is Carmen LaBurge, host of Mornings with Carmen on the Faith Radio Network. I'm seeking to reconnect the eternal with the everyday. I do that in part through conversations about today's relevant issues, hopefully helping to equip you to bring Christ back into every conversation in your life. You can subscribe to my daily podcast at myfaithradio.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hope you're having a really great day. Thanks for tuning in to Susie Larson Live, having a fantastic conversation with our friend Dr. Lee Warren. And Annie just texted in. She says, thanks for having Dr. Lee on your show. I've become a huge fan in the last month. I'm sharing his podcast with everyone I know because he's helped me immensely. He's a wonderful human being. Thank you, Dr. Warren. Amen. Love that so much. So I'm like itching to talk about this as we're talking about spinal health and brain health. Let's get to the brain in just a minute. But I want to just say, from a fitness perspective, and correct me if you see this differently, Doc, but controlled movement is extremely important. First of all, anti-inflammatory diet, lowering sugar, alcohol, all those kinds of things, hugely, hugely important. But controlled movement, where you're mimicking kind of the movements that would throw your back out. Like, let's say something was falling off of a shelf in your cupboard and you had to wrench real quick to grab it. If you can do things where you're lunging and you're forward flexing a little bit and engaging your abs and moving in certain ways in a controlled setting and adding muscle to your core, that's back insurance. Really, it is. Ab strength, right. Back strength, and balanced ab and strength on the front and the back. So anything else you want to talk about? Because it's kind of use it or lose it. If you sit too much, you're going to get weak, and that's going to be a problem for your spine, and it's a lot of pressure on your spine.
That's right. I mean, a lot of research is now showing that sitting is like almost as damaging to your cardiovascular system is smoking. Like it's inactivity is really a killer. Like you've got to be moving more. And that's why all these, accelerometers and Apple watches and Fitbits and all that have become so popular, because they help people to remember to move. And you don't have to go to the gym and lift thousands of pounds, but you do need to be diligent and careful about moving, and then not just moving in one way, but to balance those movements with making sure that the opposite muscle group is getting some training too. And that's really going to help. You mentioned anti-inflammatory diets. There's a lot of research to show that inflammation affects brain chemistry and brain health and all of your cardiovascular system and everything. So cut out things that add inflammation, corn, processed sugar, all that stuff, really helpful. And on the brain side, Susie, everything we've already talked about, but memory training, practicing, using your mind, word games, stop scrolling at night so much, because we're just burning neurotransmitters and getting cheap dopamine, but we're not making ourselves smarter and we're affecting our sleep. Sleep's super important. So be careful with making sure you're diligent about your sleep. God grants sleep to those he loves, the Bible says.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then alcohol. You know, we talked a minute ago about alcohol. There's an amazing book called This Naked Mind by Annie Grace. She'd be another great guest for your podcast, but just talks about all the fact that every study that's ever been published that tends to show a benefit, any type of health benefit related to alcohol, almost every one of those studies were sponsored by an alcohol company.
Wow.
So when you hear people say, you know, alcohol, a glass of red wine at night lowers your cardiovascular risk, it really doesn't. If you actually look at the data, the potential benefit of any alcohol consumption, is far outweighed by other things that happen to your body when you consume alcohol. So alcohol is just not a healthy thing. So it's not to say it's a sin to use a little bit or have a glass of wine or any of those things. It's not. I mean, the Bible says God made wine to gladden the hearts of man. So it's in there. But just know that excessive alcohol use is bad for your brains, bad for your liver, it's bad for your heart, it's bad for your cardiovascular system, it's bad for your relationships, and it's just not a healthy thing. So there's no health benefit to using alcohol.
You know, I've read up on that and listened to some podcasts about that. And again, I being health-minded and a former fitness person and someone who's fought hard to get my health back, I was shocked. I knew that it was, you know, obviously indulging too much was not good for you, but it literally is like toxin poison for your body. I mean, they're talking about the young people that drink with such liberty, and even professing believers who drink enough to be hungover the next day and think it's funny, it's fine, I'm free, but they actually are preempting a cognitive decline, and they don't even know. I mean, they're actually activating cognitive decline. That's terrifying.
And there's 7 types of human cancer that are direct triggers, genetic triggers by alcohol. Like alcohol is a prime epidemiologic factor in at least 7 types of human cancer.
Wow, that is amazing. Well, we've almost run out of time. We just got a couple minutes left. So when next time you come on, I want to spend more time on this, but you've got probably a minute and a half to talk about the idea of rewiring in the context of community.
Yeah, so it's super important to not be isolated, especially when you've gone through some kind of massive thing. Like one of the tenets of getting better, and this is why the church is so important. This is why the kingdom is so important, because it surrounds us with other people who remind us that we're not alone, right? But you've got a quantum level entanglement with other people. And when you isolate yourself, you're cutting off your ability to have other people come alongside you and help support you and encourage you and lift you up and help your brain function more highly. So community is incredibly important in healing and in processing and moving forward. And the other thing it does is that we tend to isolate ourselves. And when you isolate yourself, you're more prone to that negative, vulnerable thinking that leads you to bad decision-making. And you need somebody else in your life. Like I have Lisa, who's going to say, time out. That's bad thinking. I call a foul here. let's get you back on your feet. You need some people to come alongside you and love you and help you in those times.
Does that have something to do with the mirror neurons as well? Because I remember you talking one time about, you know, when you're with people, if someone is acting like they're glad to see you, not acting, but really are, they're glad to see you, that actually stimulates a response in your body. And conversely, if someone is, you know, treating you poorly, that stimulates a response in your body as well.
That's right. Yeah, it's the mirror neuron system that you see somebody smile at you, you're internally smiling yourself. It changes your neurochemical balance towards something positive, makes you feel better, lowers your heart rate. It's good for your circulation, like being around positive people. And that's also a responsibility for us too, right? If you know that your state affects other people's state and you're supposed to be a bearer of the image of Christ, then be careful with your state.
Wow. Last question. What do you know about God now you didn't know as well 5 years ago?
Oh my goodness. I feel like my brain's so full of his intimate and careful knowledge that, you know, after we lost our son, I went through a long period where I didn't know what I thought, and he's come alongside and just stewarded me so much. And I think that the most, the thing I can say the most is he really loves you. He really loves me, and he loves you, Susie, and he loves everybody listening. Like, he wants you to feel better and become healthier and be happier. And he came here. John 10:10 said, the thief came to steal and kill and destroy, but I came to have an abundant life. And it's really true. He loves you, and he's got a good plan for you. And he gave you an incredible brain that you can use to have this abundant life that he wants you to have.
We love and appreciate you. And friend, hear that, what Lee said. God really loves you. He wants you healthy, whole, and healed. We'll meet you back here next time. Thanks for listening to Susie Larson Live. Podcasts like mine are available because of your support. If it's important to you to hear things that encourage your faith, click the link in the show notes and give now.